Come aboard, you people. This is the Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Over another day of broadcast insolence. How do we feel about that?
We feel okay until I heard Kim say, I believe, did I hear it right, Kim? And you're the one you said, the weather. Did you say lakefront temperature 51?
Or 61? The lakefront temperature is 61.
Okay.
That is
all right. Not as bad as 51.
I thought I heard 51. I was about to die.
81, which it should be right now.
Mm-hmm. Right? And extreme fog yet again. Mm-hmm. Not as bad as yesterday.
Well, it's now I will say that there's visibility, but it's winter white sky now. You know, it's that sky that you get in the middle of winter, except it's the middle of summer. I mean, it's the 20th of June.
I mean, 2-0. Think we live in London.
I wish we did.
I think it's nicer there.
Better fish and chips.
I appreciated the text yesterday from listeners who were telling us all the cities that actually have better weather than Chicago right now. Anchorage, Alaska was one of them. Places in Montana, Minneapolis.
All right, now I have on my...
places you'd expect.
Now, I told you, I have this weather app, right?
That gives you a 28-day outlook.
Yes. All right, and we went through that yesterday trying to find a glimmer of hope. And even as we went out 1 month into the future, day by day, hour by hour, because this weather app is just making crap up, I couldn't find anything good. But I will say this, that according to this thing, I am supposed to see sun within this hour.
Oh, the hour by hour tells you you're going to see sun.
Yep.
Is it looking at Chicago for that?
It says Streeterville. Which
well,
is close
we'll see
enough.
How really good your, that AccuWeather is, right?
Is it your biological son, maybe, they're talking about?
Oh. Well, if I have a biological son, that's going to be quite a surprise to everybody, especially my attorneys.
I feel like the odds might be the same, though.
Actually, I think mine are a little better. Here's what it says. It says at 4 p.m. there's going to be partial clearing. They moved the 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock. Then we're going to have rain at 5 o'clock.
Boy, haven't seen that in a while.
Mm-hmm. And then at 6 o'clock, it's been clearing. And then 7 o'clock, sunny. And then 8 o'clock, sunny.
We'll see. We'll see about that.
It's right here. It's right here on this app.
That's
right
the
here.
App, just, though, yeah. You told us gives you a 25-day outlook or something, right?
Yes. Yeah, so do you want me to go through that again?
No. I'm not calling for that. I'm just saying... I didn't know that 25-day outlooks were possible.
Tomorrow, they aren't. Tomorrow, it's going to be sunny in the morning, and then 4 o'clock thunderstorm. And then clearing and raining at 8 o'clock on the people who are on the 50,000 people who are going to be assembled at Soldier Field to see the Rolling Stones. It'll be raining on them at 8 o'clock.
That's not right. And tomorrow's the official first day of summer, isn't
right?
it?
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Meteorological summer has already begun.
No,
June 1st, I thought it was meteorological summer.
Yeah,
and then
right.
The summer is June 21st, yes, which would be tomorrow.
Solstice summer, the summer of the solar summer, the summer of the lunar solar summer. All right, I got 4 passes to the 12th Annual Blackhawks Convention coming your way. John Weideman's going to join us, the voice of the Blackhawks, talk about the draft going on. The third overall pick. Just to remind people, you know what the Blackhawks have done with the third overall pick in the past?
What have they done?
They got a guy named Jonathan Toews.
Oh, my gosh.
They got a guy named Dennis Savard.
Wow.
They got a guy named Eddie Olczyk.
Oh, my gosh.
With the third overall pick.
I love the way that sounds. Great karma.
Just think a little something about that. They're having a big draft party in Rosemont.
Mm. Are we invited?
No. Okay. But we're going to invite people if they want to go to the draft party, right? We must be invited.
We can invite people, but we're not invited?
I did not receive my invitation, but we'll find out about that. Maybe we are invited.
We'll ask.
I didn't know anything about this until I just read it right here.
Okay.
And we also, listen to this, we have tickets to Bob Seger and Silver Bullet Band, the final tour of Bob Seger.
The real final tour?
The real final tour. Well, these guys sometimes say there's a final tour.
You never know.
Then all of a sudden there's another tour.
I think Bubby gets a hold of him and says, you know what?
Bubby, darling, sweetheart, listen, we were just going over your finances with your accountant, and it turns out that we actually lost money on the final tour, so we have to have a final profit tour.
Oh,
it's going to be just you, and you're going to be using rentable scooters to be able to move between the towns.
No tour bus, no private jet. Just get rid of that. try to make some money.
Yeah. So that is. Listen to this. Let me just tell you this. It's October 19th at the United Center, but tickets are going to go on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m. at LiveNation.com. So if you want to take part in that, you want to get tickets before your friends get tickets, stay tuned because it's coming up after 6 p.m.
Mm. Okay.
Tonight. All right?
All right.
All right. In the meantime, Mr. Ben Bradley is going to be joining us here from the WGN-TV Newsroom. We'll find out what's going on in Chicago, on the streets, and in the world. Michael Steele will be here this hour. Also, a couple of other things that are of note. Are we giving away the Hugh Jackman thing today, too?
Oh, wow.
Hugh Jackman for tomorrow. The man, the music, the show. At the United Center tomorrow night at 7 o'clock.
Awesome.
Huh. And Richard Roper will tell us if Toy Story 4 is good for the kids. Or if it made it into a slasher film and thought, well, we'll really surprise a few people.
Why wouldn't it be good for the kids?
Jordan Peele's Toy Story 4.
No.
That could be
something.
We don't
need that.
Yeah.
In all fairness, each one has made me cry. So
Toy Story 1, 2, and 3?
Of course.
Yeah.
Heart-wrenching.
I'd say
Pixar is really good at doing that.
They are. Oh, they are.
Yeah, they really
just
are.
Just wrap
especially
your heart up.
3. 3 was a real...
Oh, man. Yeah.
More so than Star is Born, Kev?
Oh, God. Why'd you bring it up?
Sorry I brought that up, but just wondering if that was still... I mean, I know you and Ro have seen it like 20 times.
I don't know why she does
cry
that.
Every time.
All right. Let's check in now with Kim and find out what's happening in the news at the bottom of the hour.
Watch for Chicago's very own stories with Micah and Joe. Micah Mater and Joe Donlan, weeknights on WGN-TV News at 9 o'clock.
I have to wonder if Ben Bradley feels badly about the fact that they don't mention him in those.
Let me check. I don't think they did, even on the other. Nope. Neither one.
All right.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. No Ben Bradley.
Nope. What?
You don't get a mention on that one. That's...
All right, Ben Bradley is at the WGN-TV newsroom right now, and he has many thoughts about things that are happening. What are they?
Well, Carrie Austin apparently is holed up inside of her house, not wanting to come out and
talk to reporters. Did she take herself hostage? Because that would be a move. That would be a good move right now.
You know, and if so, may I suggest the strategy of a guy earlier this week? Our assignment desk was monitoring a barricade situation elsewhere in Chicago in which the guy's demands included $1 million... and a Slurpee.
Oh, gee. Yeah. Well, you know what? Sometimes you just got to have one of those. You know,
right.
It's
especially
cold.
As the standoff stretches into hour 4 or 5.
Right. It's ice you can swallow. You know, whole. I mean, that's really what it. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
What ended up happening there? Did he get his Slurpee?
You know, I didn't hear. Dom, do you know what happened to the Slurpee guy? I'm asking our executive producer.
Hi, Dominic.
Anna DeVellante says hello to you.
Hi, Don.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He says hello, but he does not have an answer.
We have the answer here at the WGN newsroom. So that's, I know, WGN-TV may not have the answer, but we do. They did actually storm the house. They took him into custody, and then he was, of course, released by Kim Fox on bail.
Now, did they storm it instead of, you know, with an assault rifle? They all just ran up with Slurpees?
I think they came down the sides on ropes. Very Blues Brothers.
Very, yeah.
Hut, 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 hut.
Good Slurpee to
he
the face.
He was taken into custody. We have confirmed that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Then later released to his own recognizance, which, of course, is how this started in the first place.
All right.
Okay, well, we have that. What else you got?
So we are looking at the South Suburban water crisis that's been unfolding for the last week or so. This is happening down in University Park, portions of Monee Township. Unlike most of the rest of the area, they actually have a private water contractor that provides the water for them. And what happened is a week or so ago, they determined there were high levels of lead in the water. And the fact is, we're nearly a week into this, and there are still 1,500 households that don't have usable water. And so WGN Investigates has been looking into this from the standpoint of when you have a private contractor, what do your local government officials really know about the water that's being pumped into those residential homes in your community? And it turns out in the University Park case, the mayor tells us he has not had access to water quality test results and other key information. And in fact, they're taking a rather unusual step this weekend of declaring an emergency, because this has been going on now for a week down there. And the private contractor hasn't been able to shed too much light on the reasons, other than to say that there may have been a change in the chemical makeup of the water treatment that somehow dislodged lead that was in the pipes of some older homes.
Exactly.
And when we start asking Aqua Illinois for information about previous water testing and results, they say, we'll get back to you.
Who's Aqua Illinois?
That's the private contractor that not only provides the water for University Park, but also about 225,000 other people in communities, a lot of unincorporated communities, but communities stretching from Will to Kane to portions of Cook.
Does Aqua Chicago, they have a government contract, though, right?
Yes. So they are. So University Park contracts with Aqua Illinois.
So Aqua Illinois is required to hand over that information.
One would think.
But are they cooperating with the local government, just
well,
not
so
reporters?
Well, so the mayor did an interview with us in which he says he has not been able to get suitable information from this company and has not been able to get the latest test result in testing.
I think this kind of company is the kind of company that should hire Joel Brodsky.
You can't do that anymore.
Why?
Did you hear Joel Brodsky?
Oh,
I'm not sure he's able to practice law anymore.
Oh, what? I hadn't heard anything. Oh,
license suspended by the Illinois Supreme Court.
Oh, okay.
Until
again?
Further notice.
Yeah,
I thought
yesterday.
He got his license suspended like a month or two ago.
As of 1 hour ago, Chicago Tribune reporting Joel Brodsky law license suspended.
Yeah, his first suspension, I think, was just...
That was just for kind of inappropriate comments made.
I think it might have been just in Cook County or something.
Right.
But this is
Across the state. Wow.
Yeah, the Illinois State Bar.
Well, there's one guy who's happy about that. You know, when I talked to Drew Peterson in prison about a month or two ago, we spent the majority of our call with him just bad-mouthing Brodsky, claiming, without him, I wouldn't be in prison. And I said, well, Drew, I'm not sure that's the case.
Maybe without a couple of things you did yourself, you might not be in prison.
Yeah, I think there's a number of reasons. Yeah, yeah. You were the one that was standing, before he hired Brodsky, he was the one standing there with the poop-eating grin standing in front of his house, taking pictures of the media, taking pictures of him.
Yeah, you remember those first few wild days out there? He would come out wearing with a bandana covering his face and riding his motorcycle, taunting the media.
Oh, yeah. He was toying with everyone, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and he would be so thrilled to know that we are still talking about him. So let's stop.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, Ben.
The other story we're watching from the southwest suburbs this afternoon, police in Orland Park have arrested a bus driver who drove for the local school district down there. That bus driver is now accused of inappropriately touching several kids who were on his route. So we've got that story for you coming up today on the news at 4, all 5, right. 6, okay. 9, and 10. And Joe Donlin's off, so you have me for all of those newscasts
today. Oh, wait, Anna.
Yeah.
Hold on. Would you read that? You know
what? Wait, I got that promo thing.
Hold on. That script needs to change.
Yes, finally.
Wait. Watch for Chicago's very own stories with Micah and Joe. Micah Matera, Joe Donlin.
I demand a correction.
Weeknights on WGN TV News at 9, except for when Joe's out over the next couple of days when Ben Bradley will be sitting in and you can watch him.
Thank you. And I believe we probably pay for that commercial spot, so we will be demanding a refund.
Yeah, okay. Yes, I'm sure you do. Yeah, I'm sure that's exactly what's going on here. All right. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thank you, Ben. Really, it was a pleasure speaking with you.
It always is, Rose.
Kim Gordon, she's got the WGN News coming your way from the WGN Radio Newsroom in 2 minutes. Making his triumphant return to this program, it's the Man of the Steel!
Okay, got it.
Oh, gosh. I knew there was something missing in my life.
Yeah.
Did you miss us, Michael? Did you miss us?
I missed you. I'm like crazy. This other guy, I don't know.
That boy ain't right.
Nah, I miss my boy. I miss Mr. Rowe. How you doing? Everybody well?
Oh, yeah, great. What could possibly go wrong?
Have you seen the news?
Yeah, there's news. We live in Chicago where it's still November. It never got to June here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're having, and we got to, you know, I saw a very interesting story. I want to get your thought on this because you used to run the Republican Party, and you ran some campaigns, and you are intimately familiar with presidential campaigns.
Yeah.
And there's a story. Time Magazine did a really in-depth piece today about the strategy for Trump 2020, and that literally what they have done is they've stripped away all of the, you know, the sort of the usual suspects who get hired to do these campaigns, the same people that
right.
you know are in every cycle. And they are going with a very slimmed down group of people, including this Brad Parscale guy who is a it has the tech overlay that they're using. And
right.
the strategy is this, that every day the president goes out and he will make news. He'll control the news cycle in some way every day between now and November of 2020. I don't know how many days. Can somebody look that up, how many days that is? But because I'm
it's like 500 and something.
I'm thinking about stepping out the window. If it's, so I have some thoughts. So there are going to be every single day he's going to do something that is designed solely to energize the base, because the idea here is they believe that they don't need to reach out to moderates. They don't need to do anything other than make sure that his base comes out and votes, because there will not be enough energy on the other side. And if they can tamp down the energy, consistently say, hey, you know, we had 100,000 people sign up for that rally in Orlando, which turns out not to have been true, and it was sold out. That turned out not to have been true. But they got, there was about 22,000 people in the that arena, that holds that arena. There were about 3,000 or 4,000 empty seats in that arena. So it is the what they said about what was going, it doesn't matter. That's what he does, right? He, you know, he sells. He's it's about the circus for him. Can he win solely on his base in 2020? Do you think?
Sure, sure, absolutely can. He effectively did that in 2016. When you look at the turnout among African Americans, the turnout among diehard Bernie supporters and Hillary Clinton supporters, Hillary couldn't turn out her own base. Which was a problem. Now, having said that, I still think you look at the landscape and you see something that we didn't see in 16, and that is an energized left, particularly among younger voters in that 18 to 35-year-old range. They are engaged. They are paying attention. Now, the question is whether or not the nominee of the Democratic Party can translate that into a turnout model that will work for them come election day. But right now, Trump has been, and I said this about 8-9 months ago, if the election were held today, he would win re-election. And that still holds true. There is no standard bearer. You look at what they're doing to the leading candidate in the Democratic primary right now, they're making him account for saying that he worked with the segregationists to get bigger policy things done. And if that's what the Democrats are going to nitpick and chew down on,
yeah.
Donald Trump is going to laugh his behind off yeah. all the way to the inaugural stand in 2021, because the Democrats are going to do what Democrats are good at, and that is tearing apart their own, because they'd rather be woke than win.
Well, you saw Senator Cory Booker today. That's a great statement. You saw Cory Booker today say he needs to apologize. So Biden's been, you know, trailed by all these reporters saying, apologize. Are you going to apologize? Are you going to apologize? Then Kamala Harris doubles down and says, I might ask him about that, too. I mean,
But Kamala's got to be careful, because she's got her own issues with black voters and public policy in the state of California. She doesn't have a clean slate. She's going to account for that. And this is what I would ask Cory Booker. So you're asking Barack Obama to come out and take back his eulogy of Senator Byrd when he passed away in 2010, and he said that over his 92 years he bent towards justice. Really? The former Grand Wizard of the KKK? So, I mean, this is the stupidity of what these people are doing right now. They're trying to play this gotcha politics with a guy like Joe Biden because they can't beat him otherwise. He's at 35 minimum in the polls, 50% in most national polls among all voters. They can't beat him, so they're punching up. And you know, they don't need Trump to weaken Biden.
They're doing it.
Democrats will do it on their own. And if you take Biden out, who are you going to replace him with that's going to resonate in Western Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. in Michigan, in Wisconsin, in Iowa, Florida?
But doesn't that speak to what you were talking about, Michael Steele, when you said that you, the motivated, energized, you said engaged younger voters. And are they engaged about Biden, or are they engaged about some of the more the younger, more progressive members of the party?
Well, that's a very good point. They are more engaged by the younger, more aggressive members of the party. But the test becomes, and I've been asking this more and more recently, is, all right, so Biden's a nominee. Do you vote for him? And that's a mixed answer.
Ooh.
And so the question is, the flip of that is, all right, so Kamala Harris, your nominee. Elizabeth Warren's your nominee. Do you vote for them? So what do you think the Biden voters are going to do after they beat the crap out of him for 18 months or 8 months and he's not the nominee? What do you think those center-right, center-left Democrats are going to do? And that's the problem.
Right.
It matters how you engage. It matters. Look, the rest of us who aren't in the Democratic primary are looking at this saying, oh, we know where Trump's weak spot is, and Trump knows where his weak spot is. And it is the guy who can carry that blue-collar vote that Democrats, yet again, sort of turn their nose up at, even though they, you know, pontificate and use words that indicate that they want that vote. They're espousing policies, and they're doing things against someone who's already from that school that turn those voters off. And, you know, they keep it up. I don't know how you put together the winning coalition you're going to need, because there aren't enough black voters in the world that's overcome the deficits that you see in places like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan.
Yeah, you paint a very dire. These windows don't open, do they?
don't even think about it, Rob.
Right. It's a very dire situation, because you hit it exactly right. There is just enough. They're leaving enough blood on the streets here with Joe Biden, who, you know, he looks great. He's got the Ray-Bans on. Right. He's also, he can be pugilistic. Remember when Joe Biden was the wacky guy? They were like, why would this guy be vice president? He's so out of the norms. He's like, he's breaking all the norms of being a vice president. And now we're like, oh my God, he's continuation of business. You know, we can't wait to have him.
He's the same Joe Biden who got you a gay marriage. He's the same Joe Biden who pushed the administration on some of the foreign policy issues. He's the same Joe Biden who guided, even though the administration had a hard time dealing with the Republican Senate, there were some critical points, but for the collapse of Republican leadership, a la Boehner, in the House, where Joe Biden was able to get some big policy questions on immigration in front of the president and almost get it done. So, I mean, I get where a lot of people are coming from, but Joe Biden, you know, again, is not running to be anything from the past. He's certainly not trying to be the future of the Democratic Party. What he's trying to do is reposition the country, I think, at least I'm taking him at his word, away from and off of a path that is much more deleterious and difficult and trying and problematic.
Self-destructive.
Self-destructive for the future. And then let's have that discussion about the next generation, because I can hand them something that they can manage. Right now, I just don't know. What does a Kim Jong-un do when he wakes up and Bernie Sanders is sitting in the White House, right? And how does Bernie approach a Kim Jong-un, or how does Bernie approach, you know, any number of these other issues? They're not as, you know, neatly stacked and packed the way you think, number one. And number two, a guy like Joe, who has those pre-existing relationships, I would think, oh, okay, maybe he can stabilize this. Because you can't, as you probably figured, you just can't lurch from Obama to Trump to Bernie. And I'm not saying anti-Bernie thing. I'm just saying the country's got to weigh the seesaw back and forth. And do they want to stabilize and go forward, or do they just want to keep swinging?
Well, I'll ask you this, Michael Steele. As a Republican, what does the Republican Party need to do to win back America? right, to win back that to recreate its definition of itself and its place in American politics and culture and the standing up for truth, standing up for justice, standing up for decorum and respect for norms, because Republicans have run away from all of that.
Well, the party has to believe that those things matter, and they have to believe in those things, and then they have to convince the rest of us that they do. And that begins that arduous return to a trusted relationship. I had to overcome a lot. I mean, people don't talk about it, and they think 2010 just happened. No, baby, there was a whole lot of soul-searching and hand-holding and crying and getting kicked in the teeth by some of your own to kind of move the party back into space where we can have these bigger conversations about values and principles. I didn't need to whipsaw people up over abortion. I didn't need to denigrate the president's lineage through birtherism. I didn't have to go after communities of color through immigration. I just talked about values. I just talked about what we stood for. And I tied it to big policy, cap and trade, immigration, health care, and said, this is why we believe what we believe. And if you want to get a sense of it, here's a shameless plug for a 10-year-old book. Read what I wrote it out. I put it in writing, what this battle was about. And so you've got, you know, go back and look at right now and see how I saw the country in 2009 and 2010 trying to rebuild the Republican brand, very much to your point. And so if you don't believe it, Ro, why should the country believe it? If you yourself don't believe that Russia is an existential threat to this country, and Vladimir Putin, the former KGB guy, is not our friend, why should the rest of the country believe that it is?
Right. It is. We live in just a wacky time. I mean, we're lucky to be able to cover it and to be a part of the conversation and lead a conversation about it. But it is, it's disturbing, because as I read these things, it's not just Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump is completely an invention of himself, but he sold it. Right. And people are digging it, and people are liking it. And whether, you know, he filled that auditorium two nights ago in Orlando or didn't, there were still a lot of people who showed up.
Yeah,
and there are a lot
sure.
of people going to vote for him. And the question is, what do those people want for America? What do they want for their children and their grandchildren and their great grandchildren? Do they want a country in which we are constantly mad at each other and trying to trying to throw the Mexicans out of the country and trying to change the way that we engage just in our politics? Is that okay? Right. And then forget about any kind of the rules. If you have financial interests in something that you actually can make money off of your job as the president or your job as somebody in the White House, it doesn't matter anymore. When did that not matter anymore?
Well, because it is the degradation of those value propositions around the presidency, around public service, around the Constitution. Again, if those things don't mean anything to you, then what Donald Trump is doing and says about those institutions, about those values, you're like, okay, that's cool. I have no problem with that, because you don't care. But if you do care, then that at a core level, you have to be bothered by what you've seen over the last 24 to 36 months. You have to be bothered by the constant deprogramming, if you will, of that value system. And you have to be bothered by what it says about us, because ultimately, the way our founding documents are ordered, we are the government. The government is not the EPA in the Department of Health or the Department of Defense or even the White House. The government are the men and women who are listening to this program, who are driving their Ubers and their taxis, who are about to get on a plane, who are living their lives, running their business, raising their families. That's the government in this country. And it reflects more than anything else who we are
on any given day at any given time. So if you like what you like, if you like what you got right now, guess what? You're going to vote for more of it.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you won't.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see how energized people are and who Democrats. I think they're still going to choose Biden one way or another. And I think that once it becomes one on one, it'll be really interesting. And I think somebody will swing at somebody else before it's all said and done. All right. Michael Steele, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you for coming out of seclusion for us.
Yeah. Thanks, Michael. Good to hear your voice.
It's good to hear your voices as well, and you guys be good and be well.
Yes, we will. We'll do well.
Thank you.
I don't know who well, but we'll do something. Thank you, Michael.
He won't jump out the window. Okay?
Yes. Well, I can't get the window.
Can we guarantee that?
Don't do that.
All right. Okay. All right. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Bye.
All right,
let's check in now with Kim. What's coming up at the top of the hour in the newsroom?
Several sightings of the sun from our listeners. North Lake, they have sun. Buffalo Grove reporting sun. Thank you. There is sun.
I can tell you've done some Channel 11 pledge drives before.
I did. I did do a pledge drive.
Buffalo Grove, $10. Thank you.
And one more, Sycamore. Sunny in Sycamore right now.
It's always sunny in Sycamore, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it sounds kind of nice.
All right. Kim Gordon is standing by. She's got the WGN News. Coming up next hour, John Weideman is going to join us. And we might also be giving away some Blackhawks convention passes.
Nice.
Stay tuned for that. All right, now that, we like that music, do we not?
We do.
Yes, we do.
Love it.
John Weideman is joining us right now, the voice of Chicago Blackhawks hockey on the radio right here on 720 WGN. And he is, he's excited, he's pumped. Let me explain why. He's also in a windstorm. So we're going to do our very, very best. I hope he's okay. Tomorrow night in Rosemont from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., it says here, the official Blackhawks draft watch party is going to, you can watch the team select the third overall pick in the 2019 NHL draft.
Nice.
Now, John, I'm going to ask you three questions, and you have to say true or false.
Oh, that's okay? Dangerous.
All right, here we go.
Okay.
With the third overall pick, did the Blackhawks once choose Jonathan Toews?
True.
With the third overall pick, did they once choose Dennis Savard?
That is true.
With the third overall pick, did they once choose Eddie Olczyk?
That is also true.
All right. Woo! Now, you went 3 for 3 there, John Weideman. If you want to go for the big money, I will ask you this. Are people invited to the draft party tomorrow to watch you watch them choose the draftee in the third round?
Are they there to watch me?
Are they invited to watch you watch the team make the choice?
That, oh, absolutely.
Yes, that is
absolutely.
Also correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a Joe's Live in Rosemont in that, that
Joe's
complex there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a fun spot.
I got to tell you, guys, it's a nice place. I have been there, and it's accessible. You can get to it off of the Tri-State Tollway over in Rosemont, and that new development on the east side of the expressway there. Plenty of parking, and the first 200 people. I got my notes here. The first 200 fans to arrive are going to receive a collector's edition print that highlights the team's legendary third overall picks. It was the guys that you spoke of, Blackhawks ambassador and Hall of Famer Dennis Savard, TV color analyst and U.S. Hockey Hall of Famer Eddie Olczyk, and current Hawks captain Jonathan Toews. It's free, and it's family-friendly. At 10 o'clock, the place turns back into a regular bar, so the kiddies are going to have to make their way home. But I think by that time, it'll be time to get the kids in bed anyway. And for the Blackhawk fans who seem to always know how to have a good time, I think from that point on, the party's on.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Yeah. I have noticed.
You've done some post-partying yourself with Blackhawks fans.
I have, yes. I have
on a number of occasions.
Yes. I once spent 12 straight hours at the United Center, and it's hard to believe that that could be done, and I actually did it. All right, so what are you expecting to see here?
Well, a draft is really, you know, anybody's guess. I think the first two picks are kind of already in the book. But you just never know, Ro. I mean, for me to sit here and say 24 hours ahead of the event that, this guy's going to go here, this guy's going to go there, and the Blackhawks are going to take this guy, you can't do that. I mean, there are at least six guys that could go in the first six picks. But there are also some kids from, you know, across the pond over in Europe and in Russia who qualify as, you know, top, in my opinion, top five, top six picks. So it's really anybody's guess. I don't want to speculate on the part of the Blackhawks and say this is the guy that I would like them to take.
Yeah.
Because, A, I'm just the radio guy, and, B, I could be so wrong that I'm going to look like the village idiot again, and I'm pretty good at that.
Oh,
really.
I look like it four or five times an hour. It doesn't matter.
But either way, it's going to be a good time. I did want to mention, guys, that you can go to, I have some notes that I wanted to share with Gene Honda, by the way, is going to MC the event, and the Bud Light Ice Crew is going to be there as well. Prior to the draft, it's going to be on NBC Sports. There's going to be an airing of season 3 of On the Clock, which is a really cool TV production that the Blackhawks TV has gotten involved in. It's where they show what goes on behind the scenes with Stan Bowman and all of the scouts and all of the preparation for the upcoming draft. They really do a thorough job, and it's an entertaining and really in many ways an informative thing to kind of watch. And then the other thing I wanted to mention is friends who pre-register through the Blackhawks Eventbrite page will be entered to win a Blackhawks sweater autographed by the 2019 first round Blackhawks draft pick.
Oh,
so that's all cool.
Big.
Jen, I know you said you don't want to make predictions or guess who the Blackhawks are going to go with, but most of these mock drafts and most of these, quote, expert analysis have them going either Bowen Byram, he's a defenseman, or Alex Turcotte, who's a centerman, who grew up idolizing Jonathan Toews and has drawn some comparison to the captain. So it seems like those two might fit in with the Hawks, but do you expect them to go for a need or best player available here?
I think that the first two picks in large part will dictate what they do. I think that the hockey ops staff of the Chicago Blackhawks, and I could name names, but that just takes up airtime. You guys all know by now who they are. They do a thorough job of researching the possible scenarios when the draft presents itself. They probably look at, I would think they would look at organizational needs, what players that are in their organization right now that might be aging a little bit. And, you know, when you draft somebody in 2019, unless they're a knockdown drag out kind of a draft pick that can step into the NHL right away, you're probably looking at a 2 to 3 year window before they make it to the National Hockey League. So if that's their strategy, like, well, okay, we're going to draft a guy that's going to be here playing for us in 3 seasons, then, you know, maybe that changes the position. Maybe it changes who on the board they're going to be looking for. And you also have to entertain the notion, guys, this is what makes the draft so much fun. What happens leading up to the draft? It's happening right now. The general manager's cell phones are just blowing up. I would think the GMs around the NHL have 3 or 4 or 5 cell phones because of all the calls that they're giving and they're taking. It's about trades. It's about the acquisition of draft picks. It's about all kinds of deals that may or may not be made right up until the 11th hour. And so I guess, guys, I guess the most questionable thing right now, or the thing that is the number one question for me, is Commissioner Gary Bettman going to be booed when he takes the podium?
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. With his martini in his hand? Absolutely. No question about it.
They're going to go all Roger Goodell on him?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's very, you know, you want to hate. You got to hate the commissioner. That's just part of the world. You know, that's oh, he's the man. That's the man. Up there.
It's a ritual in sports.
Yeah, that's what
Gary, one thing Gary does is he acknowledges the fan passion, and that's a good thing. I think he doesn't take himself too seriously, and, you know, he understands it goes with the job.
I know. All right, John, thank you very much. Have fun out there tomorrow night. Appreciate
thanks, John.
It, sir.
All right, guys, thanks for having me on. All right. All the best.
John Weideman, the voice of the Chicago Blackhawks right here.
Isn't there a Chicagoan who could be drafted by the Hawks?
Yeah, Alex Turcotte.
That's the one you're talking about. Okay. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah. I think he just made a very important point, did he not? Which is that this, like, they need a defenseman now. So they need a guy who's going to be able to come up. But right. Remember, Kane and Tate came up when they were 19 years old.
Yeah, and it seems like more and more, I mean, look at Alex DeBrincat was, what, 19, 20 when they brought him up. It seems like more and more in the NHL, they're more willing to bring up younger players than they had in the past. I mean,
right.
The past few seasons, you've seen more 19 and 20-year-olds brought up than probably ever before. I don't know if that's a testament to development in amateur hockey or what, or NHL teams getting desperate for talent, or realizing that, hey, maybe we don't have to sit them in lower levels before we bring them up. But I think more and more you get an immediate impact from guys that you draft when they're 18, 19, and bring them up quicker than before. So could get an immediate impact.
I like how you slipped into a Canadian accent when you said that. Oh, before.
You know,
oh,
right? Yeah. Organization.
Yeah.
Hockey talk, eh? Sorry.
All right.
I could go for a Molson's right now.
Yeah, I'm going to say is that I'm not going to be able to pronounce the name on Monday of the at least three of the draft picks.
Well,
the
top two picks, as John mentioned, are pretty much solid. Who's going to go? Jack Hughes. That's an easy one for
Jack
us.
Hughes.
He's an American.
Okay.
We got that one.
You can guess he's the American. The other one is a Finn. Finish.
We got to do this again. Hey, get the Finn the Finn 4X.
Forvo. Forvo.com.
This one you got to be careful with. Capo Caco.
Is that the first and last name?
First name is Capo Caco.
Yes, I was actually going to sell a product in the 70s called that.
You might
then
need that.
Then I realized that they already have that.
It's K-A-A-P-O. That's the first name.
All right, K-A-A-P-O.
And then the last name is K-A-K-K-O.
K-A-K-K-O.
Caco, eh?
Oh, God.
Caco.
Who's got the first two picks?
It'll be Devils first, then Rangers. Many anticipate Jack Hughes going to New Jersey. And then Caco to the Rangers. And then it's kind of wide open after that. We'll see what the Hawks decide.
We need the spelling one more time here. There's trouble with this website. We got nothing but trouble. You know, there's a website that will give you the Finnish pronunciation of any word because the Finns have a very funny way of saying things.
They do.
And we use it for Oli Mata, right?
Oli Mata.
Oli Mata.
Mata.
Yeah, quiver your voice.
All right, here we go. Spell it again.
Oh, spelling. K-A-A-P-O. That's the first name.
Mm-hmm.
Last name. Caco. K-A-K-K-O.
It's Capo Caco.
Capo Caco. I like that.
And
great
I believe
name.
Capo Caco runs in the Dunkin' Donuts race, doesn't he? Isn't that what that is? I don't know.
Normally on the inside lane.
Yeah.
Capo.
Oh, God. What?
Capo.
Is that the first or last name?
I don't know.
That sounded like Capo.
Capo.
Okay, that's Capo. All right. That's the first name, right? Oh, I don't like the way this is going.
Even the machine is afraid to say
they can't pronounce the last one.
Okay.
It's apparently not a Finnish name.
Capo Caco.
Maybe it's Jewish. I don't know. We'll find out. I have to explain that in the NHL.
I'll have to do the DNA check on him.
Yeah.
See where he's really from.
Capo Caco.
Capo Caco.
Maybe change his name at some point. Right. We simplified it. All right. Well, we wish everybody the best.
Good luck to Caco.
Yeah. And who are we going to get?
I think they're going to go with Alex Turcotte.
He's the one we were talking about.
Yeah, okay. The one is a center. 18-year-old
suburban Chicago guy.
Suburban Chicago guy.
And his dad was in the NHL.
His dad was in the NHL.
See? And we can pronounce his name.
Wait, is this call and response? What is this?
I don't know.
She says it, then you repeat it. That's not a radio show.
I'm not always sure about these things, so Kevin.
All right. Here we go. We're good to go. All I know is we're people can go out and watch John Weideman watch them make the pick, and that I think that's going to be very exciting at Joe's
out there in Rosemont.
Right? Say hello when you're there for us, because actually when you say hello in Rosemont, it's just how you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
How you's doing?
Kim, what's going on in the news?
Watch for Chicago's very own stories with Micah and Joe, Micah Mater, and Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
Okay, the guys in the control room, the most important people on this show, finally figured out how to pronounce this Finnish guy's name, who is going to get drafted number two tomorrow, we believe, in the NHL draft. And we thought his name was Capo Caco, or Capo Caco,
mm-hmm.
which is a that just doesn't sound right. That just doesn't. So
no.
Here is his name in Finnish.
Kaapo Kakko.
We kind of had it.
Sounds better when the guy says Kaapo Kakko.
Yeah. It sounds almost like Serbo-Croatian, doesn't it? A little bit? But it's Finnish. One more time, please.
Kaapo Kakko.
Okay. Kakko. Doesn't sound as dirty when he says it. When we were saying it, it sounded like we were swearing. That's all about.
Sounded like a medical device, but now we got it. Kaapo Kakko. But he's going to go first overall, is what you said, Kev, so he's not.
He'll probably go second. Jack Hughes will probably go one.
Okay. Well.
So, since we're talking about this, wouldn't this be a good time? Maybe if Kaapo Kakko slips down to number three, the Hawks could Kaapo Kaapo Kakko. Do you think about that?
I like that.
Now, hopefully there was not a who do you think was going to try to get Kaapo Kakko?
The Rangers.
The Rangers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if the Rangers decide that they're going to let Kaapo Kakko slide, then wouldn't it be an opportunity for the Hawks to Kaapo Kaapo Kakko?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right.
You never know.
All right. Well, wouldn't you like to meet Kaapo Kaapo Kakko if you could at the Blackhawks convention? I got four passes for the entire weekend.
Awesome.
Going on at the Hilton Chicago, you know, former players, current players, Q&As. You get to meet all these people. It's great. You can buy almost anything that has a Blackhawks logo on it there.
Right. It's the best.
It really is
interactive,
awesome.
Fun. Doesn't matter what age you are. Doesn't matter what degree of hockey fan you are. It's like the funnest thing.
Caller number 19, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, rips us off for your opportunity to maybe meet Kaapo Kakko if he slips to number three. Do you think they would take Kaapo Kakko if he went to number three?
Yeah, probably.
He's the best available, right?
Yeah.
From Finland.
Go Kaapo.
How old is Kaapo Kakko?
18.
All right. Yeah. All right. 312-981-7200. Did I say that? Did I say caller number 19? I think I did. All right. There we go. We got everything taken care of.
Sure.
Now it is time for Kim Gordon to do the news, brought to you by Townstone Financial. I don't feel so good. Oh, God. Oh, no.
Nibbling on sponge cake.
Oh, God, don't talk about food.
Sponge cake.
Watching the sun.
Oh, God, it's a lot.
All of those tourists covered with oil.
Oh, boy. All right, did you see the story?
No.
That 54 people and a trip to the Dominican Republic for a Jimmy Buffett show were sickened as a result of their experience? Oh, God. Oh, God. I don't feel so good.
Like the Dominican needed more bad news.
Dateline Punta Cana. About half the members of Jimmy Buffett's fan club from Oklahoma who traveled to the Dominican Republic in April got sick. A member of the Central Oklahoma Parrothead Association, or COPA, as it's known.
Isn't that police review board here locally?
Yes,
a little while.
Right. Now, you know, imagine the confusion.
If they had conventions in the same place.
COPA.org. Imagine when they've got the things that happen. Dana said that about 54 out of the 114 visitors who stayed at the Hotel Rio Palace Macau in Punta Cana fell ill during the trip. Now, it was headaches, your standard kind of stuff. Headaches, vomiting, fever, diarrhea, severe diarrhea, and chills.
Ew.
And fevers, that type of thing. It's so funny, this guy repeated himself even in his own description of the things. That's bad, right? Headaches, vomiting, fever, diarrhea, severe diarrhea, chills, and fevers. Okay. It's a fever. About the third day in, we started to notice people not making it to the events that we had scheduled. And that's when we realized that people had started to get sick. They assumed it was food poisoning or something of that nature. But the common thread, mm-hmm. and here you go.
Okay.
The reason I'm bringing this up mm-hmm. is because I am familiar with this problem. The common thread with everybody that did get sick is that they swam in the swim-up pool bar.
Oh. Oh. Oh,
or they had a drink from the swim-up bar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always get worried about those. People sit there too long.
Yes.
Rubbing
drinking,
elbows.
Yep. Drinking.
Yep.
Extended periods of time.
Yep.
Kind of sweating, all the water around you.
Not leaving to go to the bathroom.
One has to wonder, doesn't one, if you are going to the bar, and this did happen to me in Cancun, Mexico, where I went to the it's a beautiful resort, and there was a and all resorts on that strip in Cancun, they all have just that swim up. Everybody's got to have it.
It kind of
it's
a standard is thing. Standard at most resorts.
The standard is having resorts. A bed in the room. You got to have a swim up bar. And the and people they sit there forever, and there's like a little there's chairs, but they're actually what they are, they're just like cement stumps, right, that you sit on in the water, and then you're sitting there on a cement stump, and there's a guy crushing ice and making a whatever it is, margarita, daiquiri,
right,
beer,
some tropical drink with a pineapple in it, an umbrella.
I tend in Mexico to stick with the beer as opposed to the ice made drinks,
because you don't like the ice.
Yeah,
you worry about that.
I do.
I do too.
I have some. I have my.
I like beer, so I do that as well.
Yeah. So
you had an incident when we all went to Mexico as a crew, as I recall.
Yeah, I did have a. Yeah, it was not good. I was out.
So we're in Rogo.
I was out for 2 days. That was
anyone
bad.
Anyone seen him?
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. I got to go back to this other.
Okay.
So I'm at the the swim up bar, and I'm having a few beers. And I'm thinking, because I like beer, and I'm thinking to myself, is it getting warmer in the water?
Yuck.
And I turned to my date at the time, and I said, is it getting warmer? And she's like, I think it is. And then we realized, because, there's a funny thing about when people decide that they're going to do that in the pool.
Uh-huh.
Is that it sort of makes there's a cloudiness factor that occurs. And then you're like, the water all of a sudden isn't like like just chlorine and water. It's like chlorine and water and cloudiness.
Yeah, you can feel it if you're too close to it.
Yeah,
for
sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Exactly.
So you felt it kind of drafting towards you.
Above my, I can point to the place right here, right now, where I felt it cross my leg. Oh, God.
So were you calm, cool, and collected?
No,
were
I
you
was
just
not
like,
calm.
All right.
All right.
Were you looking around, like, trying to target who the heck it was? Like, trying to.
Oh, I knew exactly who it was.
Was it your date?
No. I don't think so. That was later. I looked over. There was a guy who was sitting there on the cement stump.
Mm-hmm.
Who was...
He's just staring. That's the worst. The attorney's
like he knows.
Instant eye contact.
He knows and you know.
But he was a big guy.
And you know he knows.
But so he's like a big guy who was like, he was like bronzed. He was so tan. He's got one of those things where he's got like sort of the gut that's like, this is not the dad bod. This is like the gut that looks like it's inflatable.
Like a power gut?
It's like a
gut, but muscular.
Yeah.
If you poked it, you're not going in anywhere.
Right, exactly.
I know what you mean.
He's got that whole thing going.
Right.
And he's like this, bronze, brownish kind of color, dark copper kind of color. And he's got the wraparound sunglasses and the short hair. I don't know if he spoke any English. I have no idea what was going on. But what am I going to say to the guy?
Well, I mean, don't know. Why not call him out? Say, man, that's gross.
Are you peeing in the swimmer
right.
bar?
I'm pretty sure people have that face when they're doing it. Kind of like purse their lips.
This guy was very pokerish, I want to say.
Really? He was pro.
Yeah, I was looking at him. I'm standing there and I'm like, all right, this can't be, I know what's happening. And I'd already been warned that, these swim up bars, when you go to them, especially in, foreign nations, I don't know why I think that's something for the Trump administration to look at. But the idea of the swim up bar is, as Anna said, they're there too long. They're drinking, and they're like, ah, you know, by the time I get out of here and I go to the bathroom and I come back, I'm gonna get cold. It's just as easy. It's just easier to do it here.
I've often wondered why they just can't come up with something that's not toxic that makes the water change color. Well, then why don't they use that? Because then
not in Mexico. They're not gonna use that in Mexico.
I've been in a pool, a resort pool, where they evacuate the whole thing because there's the number two in the pool, and then they, they got to get everybody out. It's like a big thing. They bring the hazmat team in, and you're out for like an hour or so, and all the kids are complaining because then you're like, well, don't worry, you want to be in the pool right now.
Who is so brave that they're doing
that? I know. Well, usually kids, I would hope. Maybe they just kind of, they lose it a little bit. But I don't know. I just think with the pee, I feel like it's more common than we think, and that if they just put a chemical or like something non-toxic in the pool that made it change color dramatically when people do this, that the shame and the embarrassment would stop it altogether.
Then no one would ever be in the pool. Like every 15 minutes, we got another one. Everybody evacuate. It's that guy right there with the red trunks.
Code yellow.
Right. Then you could look at that guy with the big gut and you could say, hey.
All right, let me tell you something. So I did look at the guy and he had the wraparound glasses. So I don't know what his eyes were really doing at that point. But he did have that look on his face. He did that little thing with his chin. Like, what are you looking at? I know what I'm looking at. I'm looking at a pool pier. That's what I'm looking at.
Pool pier. Excuse me. Can I speak to the manager? We have a pool pier here.
Did he have the so what are you going to do about it look on his face? Or was he sort of acting innocent stuff?
No.
He
was like, you know.
He knew.
What are you going to narc?
What are you going to do?
Right.
He's just, let it go, man.
All of a sudden, we're Shawshank Redemption. And, you know, I was like, I've gone from like a nice resort in Mexico to a prison yard. And I'm like, okay. I'm not going to say anything. Honey, I think we should leave. I don't think we should stay here. My leg is getting awfully warm.
Oh, yeah, man.
Oh,
yeah.
Dear.
People do all the... this is the problem with the pool.
I know it.
The pool is... I mean, I love the idea of the pool. But there's just not enough chlorine in the world. The only time you can feel safe being in a pool is when you get out of the pool and your eyes have burned out of your head. And you are incapable of seeing anything ever again. That's when you know that at least you're not going to get sick. You may never see anything, but you're not going to get diarrhea. So you got that.
You got that. You also have a study out that says that you probably won't die on your Dominican Republic vacation because people are worried that they might die.
Wait, what do you mean you probably
won't? Probably
won't. Yeah.
That's the chances. They break down the chances of dying.
I mean, I just
only
had a
slightly
friend,
higher this year than
I had a
like.
Friend get back from the Dominican. The next day, someone from his resort he stayed on died. He got news that someone on the resort died.
Wait, what?
My friend was in the Dominican, got home, found out someone died that was at the same resort as him.
What? I don't understand this. It's like the Jordan Peele resort.
I don't know what's going
Dominican
on.
Republic.
Right, it's
I
like,
don't
get
either.
Out, you're not going anywhere.
I saw an interview with a woman who said she survived it, but had some of the symptoms of, you know, like of being some poisoning potentially.
Oh.
A woman who survived the whole thing, and she was being interviewed. She said she was unconscious, and she had, you know, like she was numbness in her limbs
and issues
with breathing.
Oh, God. Wow. We should go. That sounds like me every night. We should go. To O'Hare, and when the Dominican flights arrive, we should sell T-shirts to the people in baggage claim. I survived in the Dominican Republic.
Breathing.
Yeah. But that. Oh, man.
I know.
It's weird, though. What is going on
down there?
The
FBI is now involved, and they're collecting samples because there are just too many that all sort of have similar symptoms. And it doesn't seem like they're getting the utmost of cooperation from the officials in the Dominican.
Let me just finish up on this story about the parrot heads. Yeah.
To the parrot heads.
And this all started because we're talking about this group of fans of Jimmy Buffett were in the Dominican Republic. There were 144 on this trip, and 54 of them fell ill at the swim-up bar. Because I think of the guy that I was standing next to at the swim-up bar.
Perpetual pool pier.
Mm-hmm. And these were, as we mentioned, these were people who were all members of the Central Oklahoma Parrot Head Association. Imagine what the membership card and ID looks like. Now, it says here, the Central Oklahoma Parrot Head Association, which serves the greater Oklahoma City area, is a chapter of the national organization Parrot Heads in Paradise, or PEEP. None of the board members were present, so we are not qualified to comment, said PEEP Director of Membership Sue Kernis.
You can't comment without a board member?
Yeah.
In that organization. Boy, they take themselves very seriously.
Yes, exactly. They do. I'm sorry. We need a point of order. Point of order here for PEEP. For the parrot heads in paradise. We cannot comment at this point. It would be wrong unless we had a quorum. For people they all they do is sing about no rules, and they do that stupid shark fin thing on their head, and then next thing you know, they're having, oh, I'm sorry,
very serious.
We need our executive director to get back to you after they've discussed it with our messaging manager.
All of them went to the swim-up pool bar.
Yeah, that's what they did. Don't do that. Just don't do that. I had a guy, a friend, in a very nice resort in Colorado, get the flesh-eating, bacteria from a hot tub. Yeah.
I mean, I've heard horror stories.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like one of those, like, world-famous places. And you're like, oh, that's, they must do something about that. No. No.
Ouch. All right, never going to pool again.
I'm glad I already went on vacation. What about you guys?
You survived.
I don't even like taking a bath I don't like taking a bath in a bathtub in a hotel.
Ooh, you do that? I would never do that.
Well, I don't do it, but sometimes you have to. Because sometimes they don't even have a shower. Like in Mexico, I'll never forget, there was like this not where we went, of course, which was absolutely beautiful since it was sponsored. But another place where it was just a bathtub with the shower part was like low, and you had to.
It was like a bench was in there.
Yeah, it was. There was not like a shower head which you could stand under. You had to like crouch under this thing. Sometimes you go around the world and you wonder, how do people actually bathe?
Well, it's interesting because when I've been to Europe before, why do they have half showers and the doors half open and you get a breeze coming in? Why don't they just close the door completely?
Have you ever noticed that? I don't know. But anyway, the point is that I walked into this little thing, this bathtub shower situation, and it was like shards of glass in the bottom of it, too. And I'm like, what am I going to do? I got
dangerous.
This was the same place where the guy where Juan Carlos was tinkling in the pool, and I had to go. And then I went to go wash myself in my bathtub.
Was there a fountain nearby you could just jump in? I can just imagine you racing away like your pants are on fire.
Get
me some water.
I think I threw my swim trunks away over the balcony. When I got into the room, it was bad. So I'm just telling you, I think it's important. I think it's imperative. If you take one thing away from this show today or this month or this year, is that, well, two things. One, that Kim Fox should step down as Cook County State Attorney. And two, do not go to the swim-up bars in foreign countries or even in America for that matter.
And bring lots of Purell on your vacation.
Yeah. No.
Stop peeing in pools, too.
Yeah. Damn, well, I didn't do it.
Not you, but the people that do.
She's making a public service announcement. The other people should hear this. Everyone should know this.
Let's just love each other better by not peeing in pools.
Okay. That's right, people.
One way to show it.
Maybe everyone should wear swim diapers.
this should be the first lady's new agenda for Be Best. There will be no peeing in pool now anymore. If you could do it, it's better if no people.
Only in Russian hotel rooms.
All right, let's check in now with Kim. What's coming up in the news at the top of the hour?
As the son of a sailor, I went.
Texter, urine is sterile unless you have a UTI. You're not going to get
How do I know this
any
guy's
problem.
Got a UTI.
No, yeah, you're not going to have a problem with urine at the swim-up bar.
Thank you. Thank you, Texter. We were talking about all these people who got sick on a Jimmy Buffett getaway.
Like a parrot head group.
Yeah,
parrot 50 head. Of them.
Yeah.
Crazy number.
Half the people on this tour got sick in the Dominican Republic, and they're now blaming it on the swim-up bar. And I pointed out that I once had a very bad incident in a swim-up bar where a man with a goiter for a stomach went right in the pool next to me, and there was nothing I could do about it. And I knew it. Hey, you know, congratulations to our own Lauren Lapka. Did you see this?
Yes, this was huge.
On the Twitter machine, she got Eloy Jimenez to respond to one of her tweets.
Basically best friends now.
Yeah. Now you and Eloy are going to hang out. That's going to be something. Hey, could you get us his autograph?
No, I promised I wouldn't.
Let's make him a friend of the show, because we, you know, like, you know, Joe Donlin is one of our crushes, and then we can have Eloy Jimenez, too.
Yeah.
I'll work on that. I think we can make that work. He's pretty friendly.
All right.
And we both like our moms, so.
All right. So there you go. That's, boy, that's controversial. I think that's really good. Very happy for both of you about that. All right, coming up, a top five of five that you will not believe. We also got tickets to give away to the Hugh Jackman's one-man show and Bob Seger tickets all coming your way right around the corner. It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Coming up in just a few minutes, your chance to rip us off for Hugh Jackman, the man, the music, the show, tomorrow night at the United Center. Be a lot of fun.
I will.
Hugh Jackman's a very, very talented man.
Oh.
It's amazing. There's like nothing he cannot do.
I know. He sings, he dances, he acts, he's charming.
Yep.
He's in The Greatest Showman, which I've seen about 100 times.
Is it your A Star Is Born? Is it A Star?
No.
To Kevin, Kevin and me, it's A Star Is Born. To you, it's The Greatest Showman?
No. My daughter loves it. She's
really?
Only 7, and it's weird. Like, her generation loves that movie.
I thought it's kind of adult.
I did,
it?
Too. I was actually not sure I was going to show it, but then she saw it. She loves it. They love the music, because they sing the music all the time.
Okay.
So they're
very theatrical.
Up for that.
Your daughter's a thespian. Mm-hmm. I can see that. I can see what she's going to be, a budding performer, isn't she?
I don't know. We'll see.
Are you going to be the prototypical Greek mother and demand that she become a doctor instead?
Yes, because that always works. You will not do what you want to do and what you're passionate about. You'll do what I want you to do.
Right. You can be passionate about that after you graduate medical school. All right. Okay, let's do this, shall we?
Yeah.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Checking in at
number five.
Stephen Colbert's, I'm sorry, hold on. President Trump, that's more important, spoke following a morning meeting with his top national security advisor after Iran in what happened what appeared to be a major provocation, shot down what the U.S. military says was an unarmed, unmanned drone flying in international airspace.
I have a feeling, I may be wrong and I may be right, but I'm right a lot. I have a feeling that it was a mistake made by somebody that shouldn't have been doing what they did. I think they made a mistake. And I'm not just talking to the country made a mistake. I think that somebody under the command of that country made a big mistake.
You're talking to Iran's leadership.
Let's just see what happens. Let's see what happens. It's all going to work out.
I like how he gets into a fight with the press. He's the one who's like speculating on what it is that occurred in trying to be coy. Like, I know, I'm the president, I'm special, you don't know. I don't think that's the best way. I don't think the president should be coming out and discussing this. That's where you send out somebody from the Pentagon. Oh, nobody works at the Pentagon anymore. That's a separate issue. Or you send out your spokesperson. Oh, wait, no, she's not there anymore. You send out somebody. There's got to be somebody that you send out. And they say, you know, White House is monitoring the situation, and we will have a response. We'll brief you on a response at a later time, something like that. And then they do the back channeling. What he's doing there, it's a little bit of the Kim Jong-un move, which he's saying, hey, maybe Iran, if you want to call up and grovel to me and say it was, you know, some flunky that did it.
Right. He's providing them with their out, saying, hey, you know, there's just somebody who made a mistake here. Very big, stupid mistake, a loose cannon type. In other words, that's your out if you want to grab it. but I
he's hoping that that's now, because I don't think he wants to start lobbing missiles.
No, I don't think anyone wants.
There's some people do. John Bolton looks like he wants to lob missiles. He's got that mustache says lob a missile is what that says to me. Here's something else.
I find it hard to believe it was intentional, if you want to know the truth. I think that it could have been somebody who was loose and stupid that did it. But we'll be able to report back, and you'll understand exactly what happened. But it was a very foolish move. That I can tell you.
Loose and stupid. They used to do mornings, I think, over across the street, didn't they? Love that.
This is serious. I mean, this...
I don't know. It's serious, but it sounds to me like they're looking for an out. That, yes, the Iranians did it, and the Pentagon is like, hey, that thing was over international airspace. It was actually over the water.
And Iran is saying it was over our airspace. That's why we shut it down.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I don't know that anything's going to happen. You know what my guess is? If I could just predict something?
Yeah, let's hear it.
You know, I'm right quite often, is... you know, maybe Tehran might have a power outage or something. I sort of see that as a measured response. Their ATMs may not work for a couple of days. Things like that. That's the sort of tit for tat that goes on now in these kinds of conflicts.
Yeah. When you think of Iran shooting down a drone, you have to remember this has the wingspan of a 737, and it's $180 million. I mean, it's...
What?
Yeah, we
lost them.
Maybe you shouldn't tell the president
I just made that on the tariffs. They're spending my tariff money.
Wall money.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it's $180 million. Yeah. It is. Yeah, it's a big... This is a big drone. This is not like the drone that
you
go...
see at Millennium Park.
Like a Target, when you go to... And then all of a sudden, oh, there's... Look at that, this drone. You ever... When you see those things...
Right, that's what you think of when you think, oh, drone, you shot down a drone. What's the big deal?
But yeah, I see those things, I'm like, maybe I should get one of those. Maybe I should just, you know...
Can harass people?
Got one. It's a bad idea. You have a few beverages, and then you start getting excited. You start driving the thing around your house, breaking stuff. It's bad news.
And then you crash it.
And you crash it.
And then it doesn't work.
It was fun.
We did have a drone at the old place for a very short period of time. And you know when they say you're going to put somebody's eye out? We did. So we got rid of the drone.
Fly around the hallways?
It was a Roan Roper drone. It was. It would fly around, had a camera on it and everything. Kept running into things. A drone is not meant for the inside.
For the office.
No.
Mm-hmm. No.
No. We learned that the hard way. As a matter of fact, I have a memo that says that exactly.
Number four.
Stephen Colbert's Late Show may just be a late night comedy and entertainment program with real fake news staff. Turns out it too can easily fact check and debunk the president's claims about crowd size. This one involving the re-election kickoff in Orlando, Florida. We mentioned this earlier.
But maybe that crowd went home without any of their chairs. Because they couldn't get into that sold-out arena. Again, no. Because our team got their press credentials denied the last minute. This is true. So they just went online and got tickets and walked in. They just walked in to take any one of the many, many empty seats in the arena. No, don't get me wrong. He had maybe 20,000 people there. That's a nice crowd, but it wasn't sold out. Still, it is the perfect relaunch of Trump's campaign because it fulfills his core campaign promise. I will lie to you about everything.
The interesting thing is that they did say there were 100,000 people waiting outside to get in.
When people waited for hours, that's for sure. You saw the visuals of the lines outside
the
stadium.
20,000 to get in. But, you know, to get into an event in which the President of the United States is going to be, there's a very intense security, right? It's not...
But this was overnight. It wasn't like a couple hours before. People waited overnight for it.
But the 100,000 number, after it began, there was nobody outside the stadium. And they put a screen up for people to watch the thing, and there was nobody there. So that was the point that Colbert was trying to make. And the place wasn't sold out, and they were able to get tickets immediately. You know, it sold out, and all these other people were waiting, and then literally the moment that it started, they bought tickets and they got in. So, this is not a big issue. That the president is inflating the excitement around him. There are excited people. there are, you know, there were 20,000 people there, and that's a big number. And I don't think that Joe Biden's drawn 20,000 people.
I don't think any of the Democrats at this moment in time are.
I think Mayor Pete might.
Oh yeah, yeah. He could. Isn't all of South Bend about 20,000?
Yes, if you do, right.
If you get everybody in South right, Bend together.
That's what you have to do.
Get them all.
Yeah. Could everybody just stand over here? That would be really nice. I need to get a picture. I'm going to do a selfie with everybody.
I'll speak to you in six languages, and I'll play classical piano.
In South Bend. Bernie Sanders might get 20,000 people to come out and watch this and make sure he survives the speech. All right. We'll get to your 3, 2, and 1. But first, let's do this. Let's check out with Kim. What Kim is working on in the WGN newsroom for the bottom of the hour.
Watch for Chicago's very own stories with Micah and Joe. Micah Mater and Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
I'm going to have my 20th of Junetober deck party.
Nice.
Yep, that's what we're doing.
Time to hang out on the deck.
Yeah.
Sun's out.
Right.
Finally.
Let's keep it out. And the sun will be up till very late tonight, right? Because yeah, this is the long one of the longest nights of the year. The longest days of the year, I guess.
Love that.
Right? Shortest nights. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's continue on with the top five. I think that's the most important thing.
Number three.
Police say a man who crashed a stolen car near an Alabama home got more than he bargained for when he was confronted by a gun-wielding grandmother. The suspect showed up at Black's home in Limestone County. I'm assuming that there's a person named Black there. Marsha Black. Okay. All right, good. Whew. Okay. That was good. After crashing the car, 75-year-old Marsha Black pointed a rifle at the man while her 15-year-old granddaughter called 911, and it went a little something like this.
I walked out and said, could I help you? He said, yes, ma'am. I'd like to use your phone. I wanted to keep him at a distance. He wouldn't get down, so I shot in the air. And he realized I meant business, so he got down on his knees. I mean, I was just calm as can be. I knew what I was doing. He feared the deputy more than he did my rifle. And he jumped up and ran zigzag right across the field. It's just another day. If something happens, you take care of it, and that's it.
Just another day. Good for her. In Alabama.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I'd go.
Granny has a gun.
Yes, right. I don't think I don't think you should ever mess with any gun wielding person. But gun wielding grandmothers always make the top five at five. I don't know why that is. All right, checking in at
number two.
This sounds like a News or Ruse headline. A Florida man has seen Avengers Endgame more than 100 times.
Oh, gee.
I saw it at 170 today. That he had seen it 170 times so far. And he wants to get above 200. The movie
is it that interesting?
Is 3 hours and 4 minutes.
How does he have time for anything else?
He doesn't.
Is this like a Guinness Book play, or is it just that interesting to him?
Oh, it's 117, not 170. 117 times so far. So he has 83 times to go. I mean, you've seen it, right, Lauren?
Yes.
And is it...
It's a good movie, but just like anything else, if you watch it that much, especially so close together in time, you're going to get sick of it.
I don't think this man possibly could do that.
I work around 10 to 12 hours, and then I get home, take a shower, quick snack, and then I drive over here. As soon as the movie starts, I start reciting the lines on my head. God. And if I don't have anybody sitting around me, I will say them out loud.
Uh-huh.
You know, every time in a new viewing, there's different people. The laughing people, the quiet ones, and then the ones that get excited. It's every time it's different. I love the movie.
Look out, Black Panther!
Does anyone know the why? Why part of this? Why he does this?
Going for the record.
Going for the Guinness Book of World Records. It was either this or Everest, and he decided to go with this. Because you could have a snack right before he did it. Everest is harder to get a snack.
And he doesn't shower, let's be honest.
Gee.
Look out, Thor! Thor's going to throw the hammer! Watch this! Watch this, he's going to throw the hammer!
This is the best part!
Oh, wait! Shh! Everybody quiet! Because Black Panther's going to say something really important here. Don't miss it, because it means something for the plot!
So it's any movie you watch 200 times. Is that the Guinness?
In the theater, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people can do that at home. That's nothing. All right. I don't even know why any of this is happening today.
Good luck to them.
Number one.
A Utah man came home after a night out to find a female stranger drinking beer in his apartment.
Jackpot.
Yep. And wearing clothes he just bought.
Oh.
Ryan Spurlock returned to his North Salt Lake apartment at 4 a.m., stunned to find the woman, who was apparently homeless, staring back at him in his living room.
Hmm.
Bizarrely, she had placed her shoes neatly by the door, and when she got in, she took a beer from the fridge and opened it.
I walked straight in, and then she was standing right here on the counter just looking at me, and I was looking right at her, and it... homeless girl just staring right at me. It felt like a dream, honestly. Even when I laid down, it didn't feel real. She went in my fridge. She opened a drink. She drank it. Like, you know, she sat on my couch. She said she lives here, and I told her, no, you don't. This is my place. I noticed the bag was missing, and she was wearing them, too. What are you doing? Where are you from? She wouldn't tell me her name. She started laughing. She asked us if she would stay, and I told her, no, you gotta leave, or I'm going to call the police. She's jumped from here down, so... I don't know if she started limping off, and then she finally started running.
Standing on the counter? So he meant standing on the counter.
I think that's what he said, yes. I don't know that that's what happened. That's weird. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I know Kevin thought it was a really good idea for a moment, until she's wearing your shoes.
And drank my beer, damn it.
Hey, that's my Miller Lite!
Great taste, less filling. Put it down. And you got to burn those clothes after that.
Yeah.
You can't be wearing those new clothes anymore. Only option, bonfire. Burn them.
Well, I mean, also, you might want to ask, how did she get in the apartment?
Are we worried about her after she jumped out the window?
I'm worried about his locks. That's what I'm worried about. All right. This is
troubling.
I didn't understand anything that happened in the top five today. No. That's all I can say.
The top five at five.
A couple of different things happening here. Mm-hmm. First of all, maybe someone can explain this to me.
Okay.
Today, I'm looking at my phone, mm-hmm. and it keeps popping with this story about Congress being briefed on the UFOs. Mm-hmm. And like now all of a sudden, you just knew this was going to happen in this day and age. Where we live in National Enquirer America, right? It used to just be on the cover of the National Enquirer, and now it's like really in the news.
But you saw Navy pilots,
right?
Witness UFOs. This is a little different than the guy sitting out fishing on the local lake.
Here is what Donald Trump said about UFOs. The president talking about UFOs.
We're reading more and more reports of Navy pilots seeing lots and lots of UFOs. Have you been briefed on that? What do you make of it?
I have. I think it's probably, I want them to think whatever they think. They do say, I mean, I've seen and I've read and I've heard, and I did have one very brief meeting on it, but people are saying they're seeing UFOs. Do I believe it? Not particularly.
Do you think you'd know if there were evidence of extraterrestrials?
Well, I think our great pilots would know. And some of them really see things that are a little bit different than in the past. So we're going to see. But we'll watch it. You'll be the first to know.
I hope there's no... Whenever he talks about anything, there's no answer to any of it. It's like, I can imagine when you're doing a real estate deal with him in New York. So, is this a full 3-bath or 2.5-bath? You're going to find out. You'll just have to find out.
It's a beautiful unit. The best ever.
Does it really matter? How many baths do you really need?
It seemed like a simple question.
Yeah, it did. Do you believe in the UFOs? Have you been briefed on the... Because, you know, and Stephanopoulos asked him that question because I think Stephanopoulos thought he's going to go. If he's seen, yes. Like, if there's, like, some, like, big three-ring binder with pictures of UFOs and aliens. And,
right.
And, you know, like, in the basement of the White House, they're keeping one alien alive. It's just, like, Independence Day. Oh, they knew about it the whole time. It's like that. He would be the guy that goes, but I don't know, George. It's a funny thing. Yes, the alien is in the basement right now.
They're examining him.
big fan. He just wrote me a loveliest birthday letter. The alien did. Not the kind of aliens I don't like. This is the alien I do like.
Jeez.
But he didn't.
He didn't go. He didn't say much.
So here's the interesting piece of this. Is it must be something. Because I've been talking about this for years. We've talked about this for a number of years. This has happened in both the Pacific Ocean and the Atlantic Ocean, and you've had both Air Force and Navy pilots report seeing and then tracking on their technology on board their aircraft using their radar technology to track these items that are tic-tac shaped, though larger. I think that's the important point, and are able to move without leaving a heat signature.
Right.
And they also can move erratically and very, very, very quickly. And that in a way that would not be survivable by humans if something moving as fast as it moved made a turn like that. The G-forces against whatever's inside that thing would be so much that we at least have not figured out a technology to survive that kind of a thing.
Right.
So there is a question. Is this something that is from, there's some mothership in the middle of the ocean that made it here and nobody noticed it?
Or is it an adversary of the United States that has technology that we don't have yet?
Right. Well, that would be an incredible failure of our intelligence services if they had that.
Maybe not. Maybe the intelligence service knows all about it. It's just it's new to these pilots.
Right. But then wouldn't you say to the pilots, hey, you know what? I think we're
quiet.
Remember that? Remember all that paperwork you signed about shutting up about things? This is one of those deals.
There's actual videotape of one of them. The one that the two Navy pilots saw. Because one guy signaled the other guy, hey, I'm seeing something. It's very strange. And then the next pilot says, yeah, and he confirms it.
Did you box moving target?
No, I took an auto track.
Oh, okay.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Wow. That
reminds me of our show. Because there's one guy who's trying to do his job, right? And then the other guy's Kevin. So, oh my god, look at that! Oh god!
Did you see
wow!
that?
Dude!
There's one guy really professional in that bit, and they're just like, dude, I know, right?
And then total chaos around it.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow. Oh, man. I don't know. I couldn't add to this conversation in the sense of, whether this is extraterrestrial or not. I just think it's very wacky that it's gotten out and that we're playing in these waters now and that the White House is kind of feeding into it because they like these. They like anything that's National Enquirer-based. Because they just like to throw this stuff out there.
Congress is getting briefed on it, so I guess, they have questions about it, too.
Congress could always be briefed on it. We don't have to know about it. Right? I mean, that's the funny thing. Back in the old days, we didn't know. They were always looking into things.
Right.
Right? I mean, there's UFOs. And a UFO is an unidentified flying object. Doesn't mean it's alien in nature. It could be anything.
Sure.
And in most cases, UFOs, like in the West, in the Southwest in the United States, people go out there.
They see things.
The cousin cooters of the world go out there and they're like, and there was an alien that ship got right over me and it sucked me up into its belly. And then one of the lady aliens, she stuck a probe in my bunghole.
These Navy pilots did not say that, actually.
Right.
But you always have those, and
the government goes out and just, all right, Mr. Cooter. And then they get, you get through the whole thing and they. It goes away. A lot of the stuff that people were seeing in the West and the Southwest was actually military testing.
Experiments.
Right. For aircraft and other kinds of things that
they couldn't talk about.
Erratically, right.
Mm-hmm. But in this case, I think what was troubling to these pilots, I saw interviews with one of them, and he said that, look, if this were some sort of test being done by our own military or our own government, that we would have been warned to avoid certain airspace, and they weren't. So there was sort of a threat to their safety to have these things flying around.
Right. Correct. That is correct.
Which is troubling.
Yeah. So is it somebody else? I mean, has Putin got something? But is this the best way? If we suspect that Putin has something and that we don't know about it, is this the best way to find out? By like putting it in the news and having these guys go up to Congress and go, oh my God, I didn't know what was going on.
Because nothing leaks out of Congress either.
Right,
I'm sure
exactly.
What happens today won't ever become public.
I mean, it's weird. It is weird. It's just, sometimes you just stop and you think, am I dreaming any of this? Because it doesn't seem like this should be discussed seriously. Unless it is alien. And then if it is, let us know. Because quite honestly, that's a really fun development.
You might jump on board.
I might. I mean, because if we're going this far, we might as well decide maybe the aliens got a better idea for how we can handle this. Whatever it is.
I'm sure Congress will sort it all out, though.
Oh, yes.
They'll figure it out for
us. Right. Kim is sorting out all the news in the WGN Northwestern Medicine newsroom. What's coming up at the top of the hour? Bro Cotton Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Nice.
All right, now, number of things that need to be addressed. Mr. Richard Roper is going to be here, mm-hmm. and we also have Bob Seger tickets to give away after 6 o'clock. He's going to be at the United Center on October 19th. He says this is his final tour. This is it. I'm done. I'm not doing it anymore. One of his biggest hit was about that. His biggest hit was like from 1977, right? When he was just singing about like what it's like to be on the road and that, you know, long hair and you go into a biker bar and they want to kick your keister. Wasn't that what that song was about?
It's all over now. He's just going to finish it up right here with this tour.
Yeah. That's what he says.
That's what he says.
Yeah. That's what they say. Although Elton John is on his farewell tour. It's been going on for 3 years now.
Good for him. He's great.
So
he's 74 years old, Bob Seger.
These guys, you know, they should just call this the Survivor's Tour. Well, the
could be my last tour.
The Stones, right?
Maybe
now.
Not. I don't know.
Doctor says it probably is. The Stones are going to be here tomorrow night, kicking off their North American leg of the tour. Right? And it was, you know, remember they canceled the tour because Mick had to have heart surgery?
Yeah.
And so Mick has heart surgery, and like an hour later, he's out doing this. I want what he's having. How do the Rolling Stones?
I don't know.
I think it's because they're diminutive. I honestly do.
They seem to keep in shape in terms of how, you know, they don't get big because they're dancing around so much.
Yeah.
But they don't necessarily treat their bodies all that well.
Well, I don't know.
Maybe now they do.
I don't know. I don't know how Mick does it. I know Keith Richards not so good. Keith Richards, the fact that he's alive is a complete upset. I mean, it's...
it's like, who thought that would happen?
This is, right. There is nobody. I mean, honest to God, there are in rock and roll heaven. There are all those guys are like, huh? What? Come on! Oh, come on! Jim Morrison's like, there's no way.
Right, doesn't make sense. There's just no way.
Even Mama Cass is like, all right, come on. This guy, look, really? And it's 2019 down there. So they will be here. And the dialysis tour will be pulling into Soldier Field tomorrow night. Still put on a great show. This will be the first time he's out anywhere since the open heart surgery.
Ooh.
How about that?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, you already saw that video of him dancing. Like, he's ready to go. Put that out, like, not long after that heart surgery. And he's just like, wow.
Does doctors
talk about moves
this?
Like Jagger. I mean, he was just, it was like exactly like he's always been.
Or they faked the heart surgery to get him out of some other commitment.
I don't know either.
I don't know. And if you've had, like, I don't know, does Mick Jagger need the money? They're out on tour a lot.
Right. That's kind of weird. You think he'd say, hey, you know what? Chill out a little bit.
Well, he has a new baby every year.
Yeah, he's got 8 kids.
Right. Like, that's a whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the annual, it's like the royal Christmas card. He's got a new baby.
he's got mouths to feed.
Yeah.
Got to get out there. He actually is really healthy. I take that back. He's turned to a very healthy diet. And he even tried the keto diet for a while.
Yeah, I don't know.
Mick Jagger.
Yeah. I never saw Mick Jagger getting fat, because that would be really depressing. It'd be Danny DeVito if he got fat.
That wouldn't look so good.
No, it would not look good. Right, because, honest to God, he's He's 5'3" or something? 5'3", 5'4". He's not a big dude. 5'5", maybe? 5'5". Let's call it 5'5". And that's stretching.
5'10".
Oh, come on.
Well, they all are 5'10".
Oh, no.
They all are, right? They all say that. It says 5'10".
No. All right. Anyway, Bob Seger's taller than that, and we have tickets to him coming up in just a few minutes right here on 720 WG. Rokon Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, Mr. Richard Roper, it's a Thursday. He's in the studio. It's sunny outside, at least for the moment.
And he took an e-scooter over here, which
I tried, but
spectacular.
Then it died at a certain limit. You know, you can't get to the border. It's better than Trump's wall at keeping you out, man. There's nothing you can do.
At least it died.
Yes, I didn't die. Yeah. I did realize. Well, I found one with the seat. I sent you guys a photo. Uh-huh. They had a seat.
Yeah, the so, seated
like,
ones.
At first,
are
I thought,
cool.
Is this like one of those things like you see at the casinos for the old folks to get around? Like, you know, I don't want to be that guy. You know, with the little beeping and the basket and everything.
Hey,
and
my slot. Get away from my slot.
Yeah, exactly. Oxygen tank holder on the right. You know, but it wasn't. It's just a little more high powered. Near West Side.
Don't you love in a casino where you see somebody with that with the nasal oxygen going and they're smoking a cigarette at the same time?
There's a there's a certain chain. Well, it's Caesars. I don't know why they wouldn't mind me to say it, but some of their casinos, they actually have double-wide wheelchairs and scooters. Not for two people.
No.
For the one person.
Yeah. Two cheeks.
Accommodate a plus size person. Yeah,
which is brilliant.
People are not small in Vegas. It's not like it looks like in the movies. People are not wearing tuxedos.
Even the local casinos, they run those ads, like, you know, the ones that are in the suburbs of Chicago or downstate. And I'm like, I never saw Daniel Craig with Penelope Cruz, but they're in the ad, basically. You know, the guy with the tuxedo and the bow tie's undone.
Vince Van Patten, right?
Yeah.
He's your buddy.
Yeah, that's right.
And he's in all those commercials. Yeah.
Wearing the bow tie and the tux.
Bow tie untied,
that's
right?
Vince, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's kind of just dangling there, and he's like doing his thing. You're like, oh, he looks really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People don't dress up for the casinos in the Midwest at all.
Well, he got dressed up to shoot that commercial in a casino, and that was the last time. You know,
Anyone's seen that.
And last time that anybody's been in a tux.
Yeah, and, you know, Vince dated Farrah Fawcett when he was 22, so try to keep up with him, you know?
Yeah, I know. He's something. He was a tennis pro, wasn't he?
Yeah. Well, yeah, tennis pro. We're going to have him actually visit. I've got him coming in a couple of months to say hi to you guys.
We love him. Actually, he's a really good guy. Hey, all right, we're going to do some movies here, but we should also mention Jacob Dylan is going to be here tomorrow on this very radio program. Jacob Dylan is going to be here in the 3 o'clock hour, and then he will be back in the 6 o'clock hour for Live Music Friday.
Not bad.
Is a pretty amazing thing. Jacob Dylan, of course, from the Wallflowers, one of the most successful and artistically one of the best bands of the last 20 years. And it is also, I would say, 30 years, really, because in the 19, they started in the 90s. And, of course, the scion, the child, the son of Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
That can't be an easy act to follow.
No, but he's followed somehow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, what do we got going here?
Well, let's talk first. The biggest movie maybe of the summer so far, certainly of this weekend, Toy Story 4 is coming out, guys. And this is interesting to me too because I went back and you think about it, that was the first feature length Pixar film, 1995. Can you believe that?
Mm.
The first Toy Story was 1995. So that's do the math. I think that's 24-ish years ago, which means if you were 7 when that movie came out, you might have a 4 or 5-year-old of your own now. That's how generational this is, right? And then Toy Story 3, that was 2010, and they thought that was it because it was one of the best threequels ever. It looked like, perfect closure. Andy, who owned the toys, who was the kid, remember, he was going off to college, and the toys were kind of sad, but then they were going to be given to somebody else, to Bonnie, the little girl Bonnie. But now Toy Story 4 picks up, and the toys look great. They haven't aged a bit. Woody and Buzz Lightyear, it's the best gig. When you look at with Tom Hanks, who still looks great, but all you got to do is show up in your cargo shorts and your T-shirt. Tom Hanks and Tim Allen and Joan Cusack and everybody else that voices the characters, they're all back. So Toy Story 4, the setup here is the toys are all with Bonnie, but she goes off to her first day of preschool, And she creates her own toy and calls it Forky. She takes a spork, like one of those utensils, attaches some popsicle sticks to it and puts some little googly eyes on it. And it comes to life as Forky, the new toy. But then Forky gets lost and all the toys have to go searching for him, including Woody, because that's his main mission now, because that's Bonnie's favorite new toy. So they go on the road, which is clever, which gets us a chance to go to carnivals and bring other kids into the story. And we got a clip here. Do we have a clip from, do we have Duke Kaboom? Let me set this up very fast. There's also a toy. My favorite toy, new toy, is a 1970s, 80s action figure, like a motorcycle daredevil guy, kind of like an Evel Knievel. So it's the guy on the motorcycle. Remember, you'd get that, and you wind it up, and then it would go like 2 inches and then fall over.
Right, and the whole idea was he'd go over the handlebars.
Yes, exactly. Right? Just like Evel Knievel.
Yes, and that was, so it was really, every time there was a spinal cord injury in your house, we were practicing that in the 1970s.
With the toys, So the basis here is he's a French action figure who was abandoned by his kid on Christmas morning because the kid took him out of the box, and then he found out the toy couldn't do all the things you could do in the TV commercial and threw him out. So Duke Kaboom is like, no toy could do what's in the commercial. So this is Keanu as Duke Kaboom joining the rest of the gang.
Hi, Duke.
Who's the cowboy?
Duke, meet Woody. Woody, meet
Duke Kaboom. Canada's greatest stuntman. Oh, yeah. Huh. Yes.
Huh? He's posing. Huh. Duke, we need
to... Hold on. One more. Oh, yeah. What brings you back, Pete?
Really, you can tell it's him, that's for sure, right? Yeah. And they kind of make him look like him, the guy on the motorcycle. So he's terrific. This is a terrific film, like all the Toy Stories. Two was the weakest, which means it was only 3.5 stars, I think. And this one is, again, 4 stars, again, for this. And I love the introduction of the new characters. As always, there's some heartfelt lessons. There's a real tear-inducing moment here. I don't want to give it away. And people have started writing me saying, which toy dies? Nobody dies. It's not an Avengers movie, okay?
But it's somehow they do. They rip at your heartstrings.
They really do.
Of them, Lauren and I were talking earlier, how you cry at just about all of them.
You really do.
There's some life lessons in
And there's
there.
A little bit more, you know, on the first one, most of them actually, you almost never even see the humans. You just see their feet or whatever. There's a little bit more of the humans here. And there's a story involving one little human that's just... Anna, you shouldn't even watch it.
No?
You shouldn't even watch it because the character involves about the exact same age as your daughter. And you're just going to be like, you know. It's sad, but nobody gets killed. Spoiler alert. Nobody, you know, they never show these toys going off to receptacle land or anything like that. Or getting crushed. Although they can get hurt, you know, because like there's a scene where a cat is chasing some plushy toys. And they know if that cat catches them, they're going to be all stuffing, right? And Key and Peele play two carnival stuffed animals who have been stuck on the wall in the arcade game forever because those games are rigged, and they dream of one day being free. And they got Key and Peele voicing the guys, which is perfect.
That's kind of sad in itself.
It is. But they dream of the one day getting the revenge against the carny that just sits there, you know, trying to win the toys, man.
So will Lauren cry in this one?
Yes.
Because she says she's cried. Have you cried in the past?
She's a Pixar kid. You know?
Yeah.
Lauren's a Pixar kid. I mean, you grew up probably watching this, right?
You did.
Yeah, 89, so perfect childhood.
Yeah, you were the target age for the first one, and of course, everybody has them in their home video library. I will say this, and I caution parents of maybe 5-year-olds, I'd be careful, because there's some really creepy, crazy stuff. You know, the urban legend, which I don't think is urban legend, is they never test for drugs in the Pixar lot because there's a lot of baking going on with the creative geniuses. And there's always one or two scenes where you're like, what is happening here in this movie?
Fantasia-esque?
Yes. Well, this one features some really scary... Remember... Boomers will remember this. There was a doll called Chatty Cathy in the 50s and 60s. It was a doll that looked like a baby and talked and was really kind of creepy.
Yes,
and very. And then there were ventriloquist dummies. Well, in this movie, there's a Chatty Cathy. They call her like Gabby, you know, Gabby or whatever, because they couldn't call her Chatty Cathy. But she has her design set on Woody's voice box. Because she was born defective, and like when you pull the string, nothing happens. So she wants her minions to rip out his voice box, and her soldiers, her henchmen, are a bunch of ventriloquist dummies. Remember how creepy those used to be?
Like, yes, be magic? Still creepy to me.
So
now
she's got 4 henchmen that look like ventriloquist dummies who are trying to persuade Woody to rip out his voice box and insert it in her. So there's like an alien plot in the middle of this.
Second only to clowns, I think. So, ventriloquist dummies.
So those are really creepy and scary. And I have heard reports of little ones kind of freaking out. It's also, it's pretty deep into the, and they all live in an antique store, which is kind of creepy too. Like one of those things, you know, when you go into like in Main Street, like a resort town, and there's that one, like it says antiques, but it's really just an old lady with a goiter just trying to sell all her old crap after her husband died under mysterious circumstances.
Oh, gosh.
You're really painting a picture.
Yeah.
Of my, but the rest of it is bright and sunny and lovely and wonderful. 4 stars for Toy Story 4.
You know, when you look at the cast of this, it is unbelievable.
Right.
Who is it in this? Just, you know, look it up. It's too numerous to go through. But, I mean, it, the late Don Rickles.
Yeah, Mr. Potato Head, you know, yeah, exactly. Because, of course, they have all kinds of audio of him from the other three movies.
Did they bring Lee Ermey back as the Army Man or not?
No, they do not have the Gunny. They have some new soldiers. Carl Weathers voices all of them, Apollo Creed. So that's kind of great.
Well, Mel Brooks is in it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it's just crazy how well
Christina Hendricks from Mad Men is actually the chatty doll, and she's really creepy.
I'll bet.
Her voice work in it is effectively creepy. And then you heard Keanu, it's Duke Kaboom.
Flea is in it from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I mean, everybody wants to be a part of these movies. That's why you're never, you know, they keep doing them as long as they want to. Tom Hanks and Tim Allen will come back as Buzz Lightyear and Woody for sure because it's such a great gig and they love doing it.
All right. So there will be a 5, you think? If you gave this one 4 stars?
Yeah, I do think there will be.
You know, I have a funny story really quickly. You mentioned this thing about Pixar. Disney, you know, used to have ABC had a drug test policy back in the 1990s. And they, if you wanted to work for ABC, for Cap Cities, back then when they owned it, you had to do it.
Yeah.
Disney in 1996 bought ABC. And then they instituted the drug policy at Disney, the same one, HR policy, that ABC had. So, like, when I went my first day, you know, before my first day on the job at ABC in 1989.
You had to pee in a cup?
Keep mentioning this year. I had to go in the cup. And it was weird because, you know, like Nurse Ratched watches you to do it. What? And I'm a little shy here. I don't know what to do. Well, 1 year in to Disney having that drug policy, they dropped it.
Because of the creative artists.
You could not, and essentially because of Pixar.
Yeah, 100%.
Right. Because they
firing all your best people.
Yes. You couldn't find an animator. You couldn't find a writer. You couldn't find, a depressed executive. There was no way you could get through this.
Because, I mean, you know, like, who comes up with them? They're cars, but they all talk, okay? And their faces are the grills,
let's work with
okay?
That.
All right, we'll get to Being Frank, Jim Gaffigan's new movie. And Jim Gaffigan, you did a sit-down with Jim Gaffigan, and we're going to hear that coming up in just a few minutes as well. And Echo in the Canyon, this is the Jacob Dylan documentary that he's going to be here talking about tomorrow.
Yes.
So we'll talk about that coming up on the other side. But first, let's check in with Kim. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour? That's Jacob Dylan. Jacob Dylan, of course, was with the Wallflowers for many years. One of the greatest shows I've ever seen in Tinley Park.
Wow.
Whatever the hell the name of that theater is at the time.
It's always changing.
Yeah. They're one of my favorite bands of all times. And he has done this documentary, which Robert's about to tell us all about, that looks back at an era in music history in Southern California in the 1960s, where bands like the Beach Boys and the Byrds specifically, they changed the sound of music, right?
Absolutely. The movie's called Echo in the Canyon, Laurel Canyon, which is in the Hollywood Hills. You know, it's the great thing about it is it's this paradise, but you could almost see Sunset Strip from Laurel Canyon. So all these acts started, you know, living up there in the early and mid 60s. There's one great shot in the movie, they show a map, and it's like, you know, there were still people like, oh, well, Lon Chaney lives there. But then, you know, David Crosby, Graham Nash, The Beach Boys, you know, got a place up there, and all these other different artists, Mamas and the Papas, Michelle Phillips and John Phillips. And Graham Nash tells a story about how you'd just get a knock on your door and someone say, hey, I'm working on a song. Let me play it for you. And this is specifically about that kind of folk rock, that jingle jangle guitar that the Byrds made so famous that even the Beatles picked up on it. Actually invited the Byrds to London. George Harrison was the second person to ever get a 12-string Rickenbacker guitar after Roger McGuinn of the Byrds. And even sent him a note saying, we're basically going to take your song and you know, have some fun with it and change it around a little bit. But the creativity there is amazing. And the cool thing, so Jacob Dylan got together a bunch of other musicians, Beck and Fiona Apple, people like that, to Jade.
I think she's going to be here with him
singer.
Tomorrow,
she's
right?
going to be with them. In fact, that Go Where You Want to Go, which is Mamas and Papas, they duet on that. Dedicated to the One I Love. All those great Mamas and Papas songs that were Michelle Phillips, John Phillips, Mama Cass, Denny Doherty. They did, there's an album. They actually did a tribute concert looking back at the 50th anniversary of Laurel Canyon. So the cool thing here is when you're Jacob Dylan, he's huge, obviously a great musician, also a huge fan of the music. Also, everybody will get you know, a call from him and say, sure, Ringo Starr will say, sure, I'll talk to Jacob Dylan. He might want to talk. If it's Rokan and Anna and Rich doing a documentary,
like, nah,
he might not get everybody to do it. But, you know, Jackson Browne says, come on up to the house. In fact, also has the last filmed interview with Tom Petty, which is really, bittersweet to see here.
Leads the film, actually.
It leads the film, right? Yeah. Ro had a chance to see it, and he's you know, it's great, and you realize what a great, you know, they're looking in a guitar shop, and he's like a NASCAR race driver, you know, identifying the auto parts, except for his amps and guitars. He knows everything.
This is the thing you get about musicians. When you get to know them, they are geeks. Right?
Yes,
this
absolutely.
Is a big, the thing is, they get up and they front these rock star things, and there's a whole thing in this movie about how much of the art is really the math of the art for these guys.
Yeah.
And then how they're stealing from each other, and there's a debate.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's actually a debate in the film, and it's fascinating. It's the first time you hear these guys talking about it. What's the difference between lifting and stealing?
Yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah. You mean in terms legally, or just in terms of your friends don't get mad at you?
Well, yeah, artistically.
The second thing, Anna, exactly. Uh-huh. Well, you look at something like, you know, Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man. Mr. Tambourine Man, which the Byrds made a huge hit of, was a Bob Dylan song. But then there's like Turn, Turn, Turn. I mean, that's all biblical verses in it, you know. So, and some of these other songs were Pete Seeger and the old-time folk guys had done them. But they did them based on, you know, those things that are called, you see, traditional, because no one knows who wrote them, you know, 100 years ago. we've got a scene here where Jacob Dylan is interviewing David Crosby, who was, of course, obviously Crosby, Stills, Nash, but before that was in the Byrds, who got kicked out of the Byrds because he wanted to write a song about how he was in a threesome. And they're like, you know, we're trying to change the world here with Turn, 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 and all these songs about, you know, the chimes of freedom. And he's like, yeah, but I was with two chicks and I wrote a song called Triad. And they're like, we're not doing that song, David. But this is Jake Dylan just talking to Crosby about somebody else they have in common.
After they were through using the studio at night, we would go in there and rehearse. And it did the Byrds a great deal of good because we would have to listen to it back. If you hear how awful you are, then you work harder.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's exactly what we did. And then after we started to get good with it, Dylan showed up.
You have to be more specific.
Okay. You mean there's more than one?
Yeah.
Bob showed up.
Okay.
And because he had heard we were doing Tambourine Man. He listened to us play at Electric, and you could hear the gears turning, you know. He knew he wanted to do that immediately.
You know, what is interesting about this is, and you reviewed this, the Rolling Thunder review doc that is also out, documentary, about Bob Dylan's tour in 1975. Yeah. That's a Martin Scorsese film.
Mm-hmm.
That's on Netflix. These two are out simultaneously. It is great back-to-back viewing. Because even though you get a little confused, it is, you get to see a really interesting moment in American music history.
Yes, that's
happened
that's
right
great.
There in a 10-year arc. It's really fascinating stuff. So tomorrow, Jacob Dylan is going to be here, and we're going to be talking to him along with Jade. They're going to do a performance for us that that we'll play in the 6 o'clock hour for Live Music Friday,
awesome.
Live on tape. Music Friday is what it's going to be, but recorded in Studio G. And then you have not given a star yet to this. You want to wait till tomorrow, or are you going to do it today?
No, let's do it today. 3.5 stars for Echo in the Canyon.
Wow.
I don't really have any complaints about it. that were just, I actually would have liked to have seen a little bit more of the original acts. It's great as the cover stuff is too, but I mean, there's only
so
much
expensive
you can put
that
in
is.
There. Well, that's true, and I do say I love all the old TV clips with Dick Clark on Bandstand,
right?
When he says to like Brian Wilson, "Why don't you introduce yourself and tell us who everybody else in the band is?" You know, because I mean, or he said Neil Young at one point. He goes, "Now who are you?" And he goes, "Well, I'm Neil Young from Canada, and this is my friend David Crosby," because they were all just up and comers at the time.
Yeah,
you know?
It's crazy.
So a lot of great old, and then a super cool moment. Michelle Phillips of the Mamas and the Papas watching Jacob Dylan and Jade do one of their songs, and she was just like, "I can't believe how cool this is."
Yes. Yeah, it's excellent. This is a really excellent film. All right, Kim Gordon's got the WGN News. And then we will hear about Being Frank, Jim Gaffigan's new movie.
Yes.
Chicago metropolitan area, Northwest Indiana's very own Jim Gaffigan.
Yes.
Will be talking to us about this. And you'll get the review, and then you'll hear from Jim Gaffigan as well.
Okay.
All right, let's talk about Being Frank,
Being
Jim
Frank.
Gaffigan, very quickly, and then we'll play your interview with him.
I'm giving 3 stars to Being Frank. Jim Gaffigan is perfectly cast. It's set in the 1990s. He plays a regular everyman dad with a wife and a gun from Breaking Bad, and 2 kids, teenage son and 1 girl, about 10 or 11. Perfectly normal life, except for as his 17-year-old son discovers quite by chance one day, turns out he also has another family.
Oh.
In another town, about 2 hours away, a wife and 2 kids. And if you think that's ridiculous, remember there was a correspondent by the name of Charles Kuralt, who was on CBS and went on the road. And when he died, people found out there were 2 families. That's why he was on the road. So it really happens in real life. And Gaffigan is perfectly cast because the guy's a terrible human being. He's married to 2 different women. He's got 2 different sets of kids. He keeps it from them for 17 or 18 years before the secret's in danger of coming out. But we still kind of like him because it's Jim Gaffigan. And his logic for why he has the 2 families almost makes sense.
What?
So it's dark and weird, but he's a really good actor. Jim Gaffigan has played on Broadway. He was in the Chappaquiddick movie. He can do drama. 3 stars for Being Frank. And we had a chance to talk to him just a week or so ago about the movie and much more.
The last time I saw Jim Gaffigan, I was told you were going to be performing, or you were going to make an appearance. And I don't know what that exactly means, making an appearance at the opening of the Chicago Club Tao.
Yes.
And it turned out there were 12,000 other people there that night.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, like normally nightclubs, they get like a Kardashian or Paris Hilton.
Right.
But like you know what? How about that middle-aged, pudgy Midwestern guy to open this cool, trendy nightclub? But it was for Michigan Avenue Magazine, some cover reveal thing.
Yeah, which was, you know, all very cool.
Yeah.
And I believe your brother was there, too, who was greatly amused by watching you try to navigate the crowd there. And then you were introduced, but the DJ kept playing the thumping music while people were having drinks made of cotton candy
It was so absurd. But, you know, it's a blast. It's just the weirder the better, right?
The weirder the better could be the title of the next Jim Gaffigan special. You've got
there
another one coming up, but we're here first and foremost to talk about Being Frank.
Yes.
It opens June 21st in Chicago. We want to make sure people know that. I had a chance to check it out. Congratulations on your performance.
You
know, as you know, it is rated R.
It is.
And
I didn't know that.
The MPAA in their infinite wisdom has said this is rated R for language, some sexual references, and drug use. I think this was their chance to finally say, and mild bigamy. Wouldn't that have been a nice thing to add to
it? It's so interesting. I guess I don't think of it as an R movie, but I guess there is some cursing in there, I guess, or I don't know. This is your wheelhouse, but it doesn't seem like there's no overt sexual scenes, are there?
Not unless I saw a different version of it, but it's that mild drug use that always gets the MPAA up in arms. You can kill millions or billions of people and you'll still get the PG-13, but if there's a bong or a boob, you're in big trouble. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Now, this is the kind of movie we do have to reveal the main plot story here. So why don't you do the honors and tell us?
Well, I play a guy, Frank, who, as is quickly revealed at the beginning of the movie, has 2 families that do not know about each other. Mm-hmm. It's set in the 90s, before pre-internet, where you can Google and discover that dad has a second family. And during the course of the movie, it's discovered by one of my teenage sons. He uses that as an opportunity to blackmail me, but then things kind of unravel, and that's kind of the setup.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned I think it's 1992, the setting, which is key, because I think if you try to do that in modern times, people can Google and track each other. I was once told by a ladies man that back in the day, all you had to do was you could go to the Vegas Hilton, turn off the phone for 3 days and disappear, which is what your character is actually able to do. Frank, Frank, kind of a double entendre there. He's a ketchup magnet, and I don't think we've had a lot of movies about the ketchup industry.
No,
about ketchup leadership.
We haven't had enough ketchup.
But it's relatively uncomplicated for him for many years because he simply tells one family, I'm going to Japan.
Yes. Right? It's the business is expanding internationally. I don't know. I think through the course of doing screenings of this film, it's been revealed that there are multiple people that have had more than one family. And it seems like on hindsight, or even describing it here, it seems rather absurd, but a lot of people know people that have had two families. Charles Kuralt
was on the road. It was the greatest cover of all time. People might not remember him. Great correspondent, and his whole thing was you'd go on the road with Charles Kuralt. Well, apparently when he was on the road, they even had a custody battle over the fishing cabin, and you've got a fishing story, a fishing kind of element to this story right here.
Yeah, it is. It's fascinating because also this movie deals with a lot of, obviously we all have our kind of weaknesses and things that we kind of rationalize, and this guy has two families. So when I was approaching it, I wanted the task of figuring out if maybe people will like this guy by the end of the movie was the task, because what he's done is pretty horrible. And the betrayal of these two women and the two families is pretty staggering. But that was kind of the task, was like, maybe I can make this guy likable. Because we all have, things that we've done that were not nice.
Well, you bring your Jim Gaffigan-esque likability to this. I think that's a key part of the casting. Yes. A lot of times we all like to think we can just lose ourselves in the performances. But I think, the fact that you are so well-liked and you bring that, you have that, kind of cred going in, I think it helps with the casting here. So we kind of want to like this guy, even though we know he's doing some terrible things.
He's done, it's pretty dark when you think about it. And it's fun how, at the end, it doesn't have kind of a simplistic ending where people are like, all right, you know what? It lives in that kind of the reality that feelings are hurt.
Well, and even though people aren't living double lives, there are certainly a lot of people these days that have two families. You have all kinds of second marriages where you sometimes feel like the parents are, or especially the fathers in a lot of cases, we're going to get it right this time. And they pay more attention to the second family than they did to the first, which must make the first set of kids feel so good when they hear dad go, I'm going to get it right this time.
It's so fascinating. Like being a father myself and like approaching this character, because the dad that I play, Frank, has kind of a different approach to parenting with the two different families. And, I have friends that, have had two families and they describe that they were a different parent when they had kids when they were in their 30s as opposed to when they were in their 50s. And so people evolve. And I think some of it has to do with the spouse. But in this movie, it's kind of a commentary on, Frank in one marriage is very much the person he was supposed to be, and in the other relationship, he's much more of who he wanted to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. And you mentioned the spouses, Samantha Mathis and Anna Gunn, two terrific actors playing your spouses. And he's very different in his relationship with his wives as well as the children.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. And it's so fun as an actor because it's in the script, it's in the dialogue, and then you get these actors that show up, like Anna Gunn and Samantha Mathis, and it just adds a layer to it. So, like Anna Gunn, I was kind of intimidated. I mean, she's a great actor.
Yeah.
And so I use that. And then Samantha is just such a sweetie. So it's like I use that.
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, and so in the one family, you're kind of almost like the traditional father.
Yes.
And she's a traditional, and they're, you know, disciplined with the children, and here are the rules, and we're going to sit and have dinner together and everything. And then, you know, he gets to go to this other family. She's an artist, and the kids are free to do their own thing.
Yes.
So it's almost a wish fulfillment for you as well, for your character.
Absolutely. I mean, I look at my my life, it's like I lived across from this Catholic church for 15 years, never went in it once, then met my wife and got married in that same church. And then I bring my family there, you know, Sunday. You know, it's just like, but that's the influence of my wife on my life. You know what I mean? It's just amazing.
You have described her, I believe, as a Shiite Catholic.
Yes, she is a Shiite Catholic. Yes.
Religion. But that's interesting, too. You get in those dynamics. I want to ask you a little bit about that, too, Jim, because you've done so much comedy about your family life and your kids. Now, how old is your oldest now?
15.
So are the kids getting to the point where they're like, don't use this?
They're not. It's interesting because I have all this new material, and I dragged my 13-year-old son to see a set just because it's like I promised my wife I'd get him out of the house. And
take him to a show.
And there was some stuff where I talk about him, and he wasn't bothered at all. Now, that being said, I'm not revealing embarrassing things about them. Again, most of my stand-up is... the biggest target is me.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, or it's like me, you know, so if I'm talking about being a parent, it's like I suck at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you turn it back
on yourself. So it's not, I'm not saying anything that would embarrass them.
Of course, you're going to continue. You've got stand-up specials coming up, I know, and live tour dates. But it's been great to see you also do dramatic roles. And this role, I really feel is equal parts. It really is a comedy and a drama. But you did that championship season, which you were amazing, and I got a chance to see you in that. And Chappaquiddick, another great film. Are you doing more drama as well? I know you're always going to keep doing the comedy, but is that a different challenge? You get to work on different kind of acting muscles.
I mean, I love it so much. I mean, and it just seems like it only took like 30 years for me to be considered for some of these roles. But... yeah, if it's the right role and it's, you know, it's something where I can do something. It's just so much more rewarding than doing a screwball comedy. You know what I mean? Not that there's anything wrong with those, but, and those are fun and it's good to play, but, you know, playing a dramatic role or, you know, because everyone has a lot of different shades to them. Playing... you know, I've got something, Them That Follow, which is coming out, I think, in early August, where I play, like, a West Virginia father who is, you know, in a snake-healing community. It's like, that's fun.
Yeah.
That's, you know, and having young children, it's really, it's like dress-up. You know what I mean? It's not that different. And, but I love doing both of them, because if I do stand-up solely and I don't have acting, I can burn out. But if I...
sure.
And acting is so filled with such rejection, and it's so weird to shoot something and then like a year later or a year and a half later talk about that movie. You're like, what did I do in that?
Yeah, because of course, obviously, you're on stage, you get that immediate feedback, and here, you know, your experience is the memory of doing that. It's something that's in the past, but now you're sharing it with the world. And again, I think, you know, this is one of your richest roles because you really get a chance to do comedy and drama. When I tell people again, it's Being Frank.
Yes.
June 21st. And you play?
Frank.
Frank. So look for Jim Gaffigan. And there's a terrific film. And congratulations, Jim. Great
talking. Thanks so much.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Don Kleppen for the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Actually, what's coming up, Don?